Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island.
Oh, sorry. I just clipped him off there. I didn't intend to do that. I'm sorry.
It's about our that. Island connection.
Your island connection is not connected. And
yes.
I clicked the wrong button there. Sorry, guys.
Well, let me step in here. Truman, this is 2 weeks in a row.
Oh, my gosh. Listen, boy, nothing compared to last week, folks. I'm telling you. Well, I'll explain that, but go ahead.
Let me finish what Brian would say, basically paraphrasing it. This is the Brown Briefly, and the opinions and views that you hear on this show do not represent Voice of Vachon or any of the sponsors of Voice of Vachon, but represent the crazy people who are the briefly on the Brown Briefly. So with that, I'm Bruce Hallman. I'm co-host today with Truman O'Brien, Kevin Jones, and Lynn Kerrigan. And let's sort of check in with each of you and see what's happening in your world. Lynn, what's been going on with you?
Hey, good morning.
Wait, there we go.
There you go. You got me on.
Yeah. Boy, I'm having a morning. What is this?
Lynn, we can't hear you.
Yeah. You know, last
week.
We're
not an airplane, Truman.
Yeah, I tell you, I guess.
Truman, I want to mention to you that last week when we were panicking and trying to figure out what was going on when we couldn't get the Zoom meeting opened and on the air, I called in to Rick Wallace, who was one of the tech people on support. And thank God, yeah. Rick is so calming. He just quietly, in the midst of that chaos, said, Lynn, you didn't just start World War III and a nuclear confrontation with China, so we're okay.
What I usually say is, we're not on fire and no one's going to die.
That's
so
right.
So it's not an emergency.
That's
there you
right.
go.
Exactly right.
Actually, I will just finish your question, Bruce. Thank you. I had a great week. I managed to get my grass seed in just in front of the rain, which was wonderful. It's coming up. But my best thing this week was that I got to participate in that nationwide 100,000 Poets for Peace on Saturday. Rarely do I just sit around and sit at my computer, and I spent all day listening to the poets from all over the world, Pakistan, reading in Urdu, you know, people from India. There were probably 75 people on that call to Agnes Scott College, reading 5 minutes apiece, and it started for me at 8:30 in the morning and ended about 2, and I was one of the last speakers, and really had a lovely time getting my gas tank filled up with all that youthful hope. And, you know, poetry has such an approach, as we learned last week with Sandra Noel being here, that kind of short circuits our logical brains and lets us fall into possibility and, you know, kind of a trance-like participation in all that is, not so much separation from it. And I brought for later the poem, one of the two poems that I read that I'd love to do later in the show before I go, maybe. But it changed my attitude for the whole week. And even though it was getting dark and all of that, I just had a lovely time. And my brother sailed over on, what was that, Monday afternoon, coming back from a big sail to Gig Harbor. And he got to meet Bruce and hang out and talk about boats on the beach.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it was really nice. And we had a little gin and tonics on the beach that day and after their sail. So it was just kind of a peaceful transition for me from the sun and the, you know, the frenzy of summer to the quieter fall. Hope y'all had a good weekend, too.
Thanks, Lynn. Yeah. So, Kevin, what's up in your world?
Well, you know, I
as probably many on Vashon or in the Pacific Northwest learned about where my gutters are flowing freely. We had some entertaining waterfalls coming off of various parts
Me
of the
too.
Roof yesterday. So, I found the ladder and got my own shower, you know, as I was taking care of that. But doing well. It seems like this is the summer for me for home projects, and it's now a race against the impending weather.
Yes. Right?
But thank goodness the rain, thank goodness the water tap got turned back on. That's all I can say. So happy to see it.
Mm-hmm. And Truman, you got your hay put away?
Yeah, listen, this has been, we started out last Tuesday. Molly and I are doing our show in the morning, right? And we see the hay truck roll by. I mean, he's a little bit ahead of when he was supposed to be there. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here with the big truck ready to go down and load all my hay from there. And, or my wife's hay, I should say. And so then when we got ready to sign you guys on, somebody had signed out of Zoom. And so here I am frantically trying to get Zoom back on into the correct thing. And I could not get my brain around the correct, my fingers on my brain typing it the correct amount. And I entered the darn thing wrong so many times, it locked me out. And I was like, oh, man. So here we are, you know. And thank you, Lynn. Oh, my gosh. Did she come through as a trooper or what? She grabbed the reins and took off and just ran the show. And I was able to get out of here and go get my hay. And that came out great.
Well,
and so, and anyway, thank you very much, Lynn.
Thanks
for
staying long enough to help me realize we couldn't get anywhere with that problem and to just keep talking.
Just keep going, man. That's all we could do. But I have to tell you, Monday, I think it was Monday. Yeah, I had an absolutely fabulous day. My good friend Ken, he and I went in his airplane. He needed to get a little time in. He hadn't flown in a while. So we flew down to Chehalis. Got some gas down there, and then we walked across to this wonderful little golf course they have, Riverside Golf Course right there in Chehalis. They have a great little bistro. We sat up on the deck and had lunch and looked out over the beautiful golf course, and then flew back to Vashon, and my friend Kevin was there with his float plane, and we went out in his float plane and went up to Lake Isabel, which is just the most beautiful spot in the Northwest.
Where is it?
It's between Gold Bar and Index. It's up in the mountains. It's at about 3,000 feet elevation, the lake is. But it is crystal clear. And there's one little sandy beach that we beached the airplane on and got out and rolled my pants up and walked around in the in the wonderful. The water was so warm, I wanted to strip off my clothes and go swimming. I didn't, but I wanted to. It was so nice. But anyway, I came back a new man. I was very relaxed and enjoying my life, as it were, at that point. Mm-hmm. So that was my week.
Sounds like an exciting week.
How about you,
sounds
Bruce?
Like the kind of renewal everybody needs.
Exactly.
this last week was an exciting week for the Heritage Museum. You know, the In and Out exhibit, which we just brought down at the beginning of this month, was awarded a national award for excellence by the American Association of State and Local History. And so the two curators, Ellen Kritzman, Stephen Silla, went back to Little Rock, Arkansas. You know, they braved the airplane flight back to Little Rock and received the award last Friday. And so very exciting. It's the second national award the museum has won. We won a similar award in 2016 for the Native People of Vashon Island Navigating the Seas of Change exhibit that Raina Holtz and Laurie Tucker curated along with the Puyallup tribe. So, so the Heritage Museum is doing well. We've won two national awards. We've won a number of King County and State of Washington awards for our exhibits. So very proud of our little local Heritage Museum.
Thank you for everything you've done for that. It's really such a dynamic, community-oriented facility. You know, it's not just a fusty old museum with a bunch of artifacts that doesn't interact currently with the community. It does. And yes, it's wonderful. Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you. Yes, we try and be relevant. In fact, there's an interesting thing going on right now. Many of you are familiar with the old Curiosity Shop in
Seattle waterfront.
Seattle waterfront. Well, that has been redone with the redoing of the Coleman Dock, and so the totem poles. There's actually a totem pole, welcome pole kind of thing, with a banner across the top of it, carved in northern style. And then two house poles that sat beside it. So there's sort of five pieces to this that were all found. We found out were all carved by a Vashon Island resident, Otis Baxter.
Oh my gosh!
His wife Mary Baxter lived on Vashon in the 1950s and 60s. Interesting couple. They could not have children, so they were parents to 26 foster children over about a 10-year period. So really interesting. But Mary was Macaw, Indian tribe, and Otis's grandmother was Seminole.
Oh, wow.
They were married, but he learned carving at the Macaw village. And he actually carved those poles for the old Curiosity Shop.
I had no idea.
So since the poles are now in storage and they're looking for a place for them to go, the Heritage Museum's in the running, perhaps, to get them and return them to Vashon Island.
Wow!
Oh, love that idea. What can we do to make that happen? Who can we appeal to help make that happen?
Right now, we've just made contact with the family who has them and trying to see whether or not they'll donate them to the museum. And if they do, I mean, there's a whole cultural issue. They're carved by a non-Salish Sea native person. They're carved in the style of the northern coast, so Alaska and Canada style rather than Coast Salish style. And so if we do get them and we do have them and are able to put them on display, we would most likely commission a Coast Salish pole to go along with them, and then have a display that really talks about the problem of cultural appropriation, the way Seattle has always taken Northern Coast art and presented it as Seattle rather than Coast Salish art. And I mean, so it's a complex issue, and we're working with the Puyallup tribe of Indians as well on this, and whether or not that would be appropriate and whether or not we could have it as an educational display rather than as an art display. Kevin.
You know, Bruce, as you were talking, you're mentioning these names, and I'm thinking, those are so familiar names. And it turns out that a colleague of Susie's was the Northwest Archaeological, the leader of the Northwest Archaeological Society. Mm-hmm. And we had the amazing opportunity to be invited to go along with him to a potlatch that was hosted by the Macaw. Mm-hmm. And he would routinely have students go and meet with the elders of the tribe and talk. And so these names are just resonating from 25 years ago, those experiences. Wow. So it's fantastic to hear that those relationships are in place and that the museum is working to foster these kinds of opportunities.
You know, Bruce, would it be possible even to get them on loan? You know, I mean, if nothing else.
Yeah, that's the family's interested in having them preserved, because they can't be reinstalled, and you know there's all these sort of cultural issues around them. So the possibility is for them. What we're working with family is seeing if they're willing to donate them to the museum, and then what we would do is create a display probably somewhere in the back of the museum, and then work with the Puyallup tribe to develop a Coast Salish pole to have in contrast to these northern style poles, and then have that whole history of, you know, how Seattle went up to Alaska and stole a totem pole that they put in Pioneer Square. Right. You know, sure. I mean, it's a long, long history back into the late 19th century of Seattle sort of appropriating Northern style art to represent, you know, and you see it on the Seattle Seahawks.
That's logo. Just what sure, I was sure. going to say. I yeah. saw that little clip on Crosscut on PBS this weekend talking about the Seattle Seahawk mask not right. being from a coastal tribe and right. Starting to think about what that means and how to approach that.
But it's, you know, it's the museum's approaching it in a way that, like the Confederate statues that are being mm-hmm. removed. And yes, you know, it's appropriate to remove them, but also it's appropriate to put them in a museum and have an explanation of why they were removed and what they represent and how they became the cultural artifacts they are. And that's the way sort of we're approaching this is if we were to get those poles and if we were to put them on display, they would be very much a cultural artifact of an inappropriate cultural appropriation of Northern style art into Puget Sound. So it's an interesting kind of project to be working on at this point.
What that also makes me think about, Bruce, is the argument that's happening right now in academics about critical race theory. What you just described is a perfect example of how to use an examination of our relationship to the various cultures that interact and how sometimes white culture, as it was colonizing, just did just what you said, you know, grabbed examples of the cultures they were dealing with and kind of made them their own. Maybe they would have even said in all good faith, but that is not how it felt to, you know, the tribes having their sacred objects taken from them. And so now we're all trying to live together with a better understanding of how do we honor each other instead of take from each other. So, I mean, that's the essence of critical race theory right there. It's nothing that tells you how to think. It tells people to think a little bit about their actions. Mm-hmm. Kevin.
Well, in fact, the elder at the time, Isabelitis, who was actually had been out in a whaling canoe. The women were not like allowed to do this. Bruce, you may know this story, but apparently they were on the beach ready to go. And she's of the whaling clan, and on the baskets, she is therefore allowed to put the whale icons as they do their weaving. And they were short a person in the boat, and it was okay, come along. She was in her 90s at the time when we had a chance to talk to her, talked about the fact that they were moved into schools, you know, and learning English, and they were taken from the reservation.
Yes.
To do that and essentially reculturalized, if you will, maybe that's a word. but the fantastic thing was being able to be in community when they were talking about a tribal member who had gotten in a very bad accident, and they were honoring the first responders who essentially saved his life. Mm-hmm. And tribal members had come from all over the Northwest and Canada. Mm-hmm. And they were talking not only about that, but also about whether they should resume their tradition of whaling.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of the conversation was so striking. And people who've had this opportunity know what I'm talking about. And I was struck by that, and I asked my friend Dale Crows, the head of the Northwest Archaeological Society, why was I so impressed with that? And he says they have a verbal tradition, and they invest in their ability to tell a story that's meaningful. And you've just experienced that, and it was very moving, and well worth people's time to engage when you have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have to throw out one quick story. You're talking about whaling. I had the opportunity to go to a whaling camp up in up outside of Nome several years ago. I knew the family that owned the whaling camp, and I was one of only, I think, two white people who had ever been out there that was not married into the group. And I was invited there because of the fact that I flew so many supplies and things into Nome as an airline pilot. But the next year, I was able to go back again, actually 2 years later, and take my daughter so that she could get exposure to that culture as well, which was, and one of the most incredible things is we were going to go out on to the camp, but they had just got a whale the day before. Mm-hmm. And so my friend said, well, we're really not going to go out. We're going to butcher this whale here. She said, but you're welcome to participate. And so we did. And when we arrived, they put Molly in a garbage bag and gave her an ulu, and she went to work with all the other native folks cutting up this whale. And I went over and sat down with the patriarch and chatted with him a bit about, you know, the whole thing. And toward the later in the afternoon, people started coming into the room, and they were all dressed to the nines in their native garb, beautiful, beautiful coats and whatever. And what it was is there's a tradition that the first whale of the season is shared with the village. And so the whole village turned out. They'd been cooking all day. The whole village turned out. And once everyone was around, the patriarch got on the radio and went into Inupiaq and gave this big, long speech and ended it with a prayer. And you could tell that he was going into this prayer because mm-hmm. of the way everyone reacted. Mm-hmm. But it was one of the most moving experiences. It was really, really, really neat. Mm-hmm. And I was delighted that my daughter was able to experience that. So anyway, mm-hmm. just another cultural thing that we got to share.
What's an ulu, Truman? Is that a traditional knife butchering?
Yeah, it's a knife.
Whales it's got in particular?
It has a handle and then a curved blade. I could draw you a picture,
but that's
I can't
right.
really describe it. But it's a special knife that yeah. they have. Yeah, they
it's
use
a great
it all the time.
Story.
Wow, interesting sort of interchanges, cultural interchanges that take place. And as you do that, I think you become more sensitive to other cultures and respectful of other cultures. And so it's something that everybody should have an opportunity to experience at some point.
I completely agree.
So let me ask you about COVID as briefly. So Vashon, we're up to 177 official cases. The number is actually higher than that. 60 since July 1st, since this sort of Delta variant surge has gone on. So what's happening here on Vashon?
Wow. I would expect people are traveling, yeah, you know, to interact with other people. And, you know, that is driving our cases up a little bit, I think. You know, our death rate is going up, but not here. We have only had, one or two people die from COVID, I think, that we
officially
know.
Two, officially two, actually three, but King County has coded one of them as not being a Vashon resident. So,
yeah.
But still, that's, and then the last death was, I think the last death was in February or March.
Right. Well, all I know is that the boosters are available at the pharmacy.
After the 11th.
The 11th? Yeah. Is that right?
I believe Kevin? So. Correct.
Maybe I'll say that, you know, the COVID gave us a head fake here. You know, there's even now, I think you can watch in the Uber commercials, for example, like, now's the time to go and get back and see the rest of the world, right? And travel companies are similarly. I think everybody is just really ready for this to be over. And of course, as it's been said before, we're not in control of it. We just have to be reactive to it. Delta variant was, not unexpected in terms of variations, but I think unexpected in people's beliefs about how the vaccine could protect us. A little bit uncertain. I heard another report today. I'm not quite sure of its pedigree, but the question of if you are vaccinated and you do come down with the Delta variant, what are the consequences? And I think what people can be assured of is that the probability of death is very low for those. Probability of serious injury or, you know, consequences is lower. but they still talked about long COVID, right? Mm-hmm. The persistent symptoms that can still accompany catching the Delta variant, even with being vaccinated. So again, I'm not sure the pedigree, but again, it's a novel coronavirus, right? So people are still trying to understand it. And we are all the lab rats, if you will, right, that form this database of expectations. So I do think, well, it's I'm sure everybody, including myself, is ready to, you know, get on with life. It's not time right now.
And I think that we have a higher percentage of unvaxxed folks that we're not really aware of. I mean, you know, it's becoming to our attention now that we have a couple of prominent citizens who are anti-vaxxers, and I think there are probably a lot more that are just quietly, you know, avoiding the whole thing, and we've got to get these folks on board. I don't know how we do it.
Although I will say that Charlie Krimert, our fire chief, finally got vaccinated. There was an article in the paper Monday, September 27th, that I really want to give him some props for, because he admitted that he didn't really share what his reasons were very much, and that he's thought about it, and that given he wants to keep his job with the possibility and probability of doing EMT care and working with all the firefighters that do, he has agreed to go ahead and get vaccinated. So, you know, I think that's honorable of him to have considered that and changed his mind and gone ahead. I'm relieved, and I'm grateful to him for having done so, and I think it leaves some opening there for other people who have been hesitant to realize that, you know, we've gotten a lot more data as we've gone along about what seems to be working and right, what's not. And I know they're waiting for the data to come in on the Moderna and the Johnson & Johnson booster vaccines. Yeah, before they authorize FDA authorizes boosters for those particular vaccines. So I think we're making some slow progress here. And again, thanks, Charlie.
But it is also interesting, one, and we can come back and talk more about mandates and how they work and whether they work. But in essence, I mean, you know, Vashon's about 93, getting close to 94% vaccinated of those over age 12. You know, and the bulk of the new cases are occurring among those under 16, under right, 18 on right, Vashon. But also it's that sense of, you know, if we're 93-94% vaccinated out of 12,000 people, that means about 600 or 700 people are not vaccinated. Right. So always important to sort of keep that in mind, that there are a number of people out there who are unvaccinated, a relatively significant number. And then everyone under 12 is unvaccinated. Cooperative Preschool just had to shut down their toddler program because of an exposure. Mm-hmm. I think they just tested something like 23 or 24 people at the middle school. Yesterday. So it's out there. Yeah, Kevin.
Well, and, you know, thanks for Vashon Be Prepared and the folks who set up some of that response, right, and are really responsible for looking after our health and safety. I can say that my healthcare provider just today is the day. The gates are open to go ahead and schedule not only your booster shot, if you meet the requirements, but your flu shot.
So now people
have that opportunity to improve public safety by taking those steps.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make a quick comment, if I may, Kevin, and it really had to do with, you know, your smiling use of the word, we're all lab rats here. And, you know, I was happy to be one. I guess I know there's a lot of discussion about that out there among the people who are hesitant to get vaccinated. And for me, when I weighed that rubric, I thought that the risk to me was far greater to be unvaccinated and to face, you know, a serious illness, if not death, if I caught COVID, than to go ahead and be part of a great national experiment that is really pretty astounding, that actually started with President number 45, you know, saying it's not good enough to say it takes years to develop a vaccine, get it done. And,
well, you know, this is a breakthrough. I mean, this is like, you know, the discovery of penicillin, which, by the way, was today on this date.
That's right. 1928.
There you go. So, you know, that's one of these kind of watershed moments.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying, is that we were lucky to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And I think this is like, you know, that this is science, right? This
exactly.
is, I mean, which most of us are probably, given Vashon's makeup, is most of us are probably alive today because of science. But some are, of course, conditioned and persuaded to not believe it and to not buy into it. But, you know, if you ever take a medication, if you ever take an aspirin, right? I mean, those are all from the same process. Old technology now, new technology is advancing these vaccines. But if you ever do any of those things, it's like, why then doesn't the vaccine make sense for COVID? I don't get it, but that's okay. We all do what we have to do.
By the way, I need to put a plug in for the Voice of Vashon. If you go to voiceofvashon.org, go to the shows tab and look at the morning scramble, yesterday's morning scramble, that's Monday. Our executive director, Kate, and her husband do a show on Mondays. They do the morning scramble on Mondays. And they interviewed Chief Krimert. And if you want to scan ahead a little bit, I think it's around the 9:30 time slot and on that recording. But there's a chance for you to be able to hear him in the flesh. So there you go.
So, Truman, you're talking about 9/27, yesterday's date, 9/27, is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you could go to the
about
date.
I'm saying about the 9:30 time frame. But
right.
Yeah, just look up, just go to voiceofvashon.org, click on the shows tab. And when you get the shows tab, you'll see all of the shows that are archived, including ours. And you can click on Morning Scramble, and you will find Kate and Doug's recording there.
Oh, so, that's great.
There you go.
Great. Thanks, Truman. Uh-huh. So last week, before this NAFU, Kevin was going to talk a little bit about redistricting. The proposal right now is to redistrict Washington State. And that, Kevin, as I understand it, is part of a 10-year sort of census-driven kind of redistricting of not only national offices, but also state and local offices. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. One of the motivations for the census is to understand where we all, how many people all live where, and the striving for equal representation in numbers means that as people move around and certain districts grow and certain shrink, there's just become fewer people maybe in the legislative district. Ours is the 34th. You know, we have Senator Wynn and Representatives Cody and Fitzgibbon. So the commission in Washington, it's the redistricting.wa.gov. You can go out there and you can see on their site the proposed maps. So again, that's redistricting.wa.gov. And it turns out that one of the commissioners has proposing that Vashon be included in the 26th legislative district. And if those, that, which is currently represented by Senator Eileen, oh my goodness, her name's escaping right now, but Representatives Michelle Caldier and Jesse Young, the two representatives are Republicans. The senator is Emily Randall, and she was elected by only about 108 votes a couple of years ago, so coming up on 4 years ago now. So, based on that redistricting plan, Vashon would change its representatives, and we would then be linked with the community that includes Port Orchard and Bremerton and Points North in this one commissioner's view. So I know there's going to be comment on that, and we'll come back to this, but do, if you want to express your opinions about whether that's a good or a bad idea. October 5th, next Tuesday, is the opportunity to sign up to testify to the commissioners about your thoughts. And if you go to the Indivisible Vashon Facebook page, I just reposted the link to sign up to testify. So other than that, I know, Lynn, I think you have an opinion about whether this is a good or a bad idea.
Well, I think what I'm trying to do is gather enough information to have an opinion. I always have a reaction. Whether it's my opinion is it's another matter. But I think my question, hearing that the 26th was in Port Orchard, was how does that affect and influence our relationship with King County, you know, as their rural set-aside and our kind of tight connections with Seattle and King County, having been a part of the 34th district for a long time. I just don't understand why we would be placed in a district with Port Orchard unless that benefits somebody. Like, it might make a lot more liberal votes be dumped into that district than exist there now. You know, I just kind of don't understand why that was proposed, who it benefits, what the story is. So I have some information gathering to do. Do you know more about any of that?
I don't, but I will say that, you know, the commission is has a number of guidelines about how they draw the districts, and keeping communities together is one. For example, a number of the commissioners recognized that the large Latina population around Yakima had been broken up in the current districts, and therefore they are unable to achieve a majority and get a representative who is from their same culture and has their same lived experience. And so some of the commissioners are changing the maps to allow for that to happen. And so, as you know, really curious, Bruce has talked, you've talked a number of times about where Vashon has historically had relationships. And I think you've mentioned that we started strong with Tacoma, and then things shifted and strengthened our relationships with Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I've never heard you talk about a really strong cultural or industrial or market relationship with the peninsula, but maybe that is there. But I don't know, where's the historical center of gravity on this, do you think, Bruce?
Well, as you mentioned, I mean, the early historic sort of relationship was with Tacoma. And then with the North End Ferry Dock being developed in the 1920s, a paved highway, the only paved highway on any Puget Sound Island until after World War II was on Vashon and connected center to the North End Ferry Dock. And then the North End Ferry went to downtown Seattle, not to Fauntleroy. So 1920s and 30s, you saw that shift away from Burton being the dominant community on the island to Vashon Town emerging as a dominant community, and the focus shifting away from Tacoma to Seattle, as Seattle sort of became the predominant city in the Puget Sound region, and Tacoma sort of began to fade in that role. Vashon has had very little relationship with the Kitsap Peninsula. The main reason we do is because of the Triangle Route, and the Triangle Route was developed early on as sort of a stopgap measure, just because it was hard. There was not enough traffic from Harper, which was the original site of the dock, which was then moved to further south to Southworth, where it is today. There was never enough traffic from Southworth to really justify a single ferry going back and forth, either to Fauntleroy or to downtown Seattle, until recently, within the last 10, 15 years, as the Kitsap Peninsula and Port Orchard and that area has really developed, all of a sudden it's become more important. But Vashon has very little relationship, economic, social, or political, with the Kitsap Peninsula. And Truman, let me just interject this. Yeah. Vashon for a long time was part of the 30th District. When I came to Vashon in the 1970s, Vashon had Republican House members and senators, because we were connected to Federal Way in Auburn and that sort of south part of King County, which was heavily Republican, and Vashon Democratic votes were sort of blown away in the wind. When a redistricting occurred last time, we were moved to the 34th. Then we're linked with West Seattle, which is a heavily Democratic area. Vashon's heavily Democratic. And so it's been a good relationship. But all of this goes back to the concept of gerrymandering.
Yes, it does.
How do you draw districts that are fair and equitable?
Yeah, that's exactly the two things I was going to say is, you know, how does this relate to gerrymandering? And that was the first question. And then the second thing is that, you know, because of the economy here on the island, the housing market and all of those things being so high, we are importing a number of workers from Southworth, from the peninsula. And so that relationship, I think, is being strengthened by that. And I'm wondering, you know, if that maybe is part of the thinking that because of that influx of those inferners from over there west of the island, you know. Yeah, Kevin.
Well, and I took the 8 o'clock boat off the south end, and similarly, people coming on to Vashon from Tacoma, and in fact, the line to get on the next boat, you know, they had all four lanes filled up, and I imagine Seattle is very similar in terms of, you know, workers who come over to Vashon. So it is an area of requirement for redistricting, called a community of interest. And it's defined as a group of people in a geographic area or region or neighborhood who have common political, social, or economic interests. Mm-hmm. And you can see that makes sense, right? We're electing officials to operate on our behalf around those interests. And so that's one of the criteria to consider. But do go out to Indivisible Vashon Facebook page. There's two Indivisible Vashons. You got to find the group, actually. And there's some links there, not only to testify, but also to the League of Women Voters that has some videos about testifying and some good hints about how to go ahead and do that if you'd like to express your opinion.
Well, and I'd also say, as we explore what this means to us, please let me encourage our listeners to follow up, as you suggest, Kevin, but to also find out what this would do for somebody, what it means, and who it benefits, because the cultural part seems like the tip of the iceberg to the part of gerrymandering's usual uses, which is to balance out our votes to somebody's benefit. And we need to find out whose that is. That's all I'll say about that.
Yes. Well, we know that Vashon is a durable and powerful progressive force. And the Brown Briefly certainly represents that as what Brian called progressive persuasion. And so, you know, you have to wonder what those motivations are sometimes. But anyway, the commissions are directed by guidelines, and testimony, if people who want to testify, your last chance, by the way, is October 5th. After that, the maps go forward and they get reconciled, and then we're in whatever districts we end up in. So.
All right. Hey, I do want to put in a plug for Captain Joe's show, which is at 12:30 today. Captain Joe's down in Key West, Florida, at his I think it's the museum that was on the ship that he used to command, and he's going to be broadcasting from down there today. So I'd encourage folks to tune into that at 12:30. And in the meantime, we.